Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
Animal Voices on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio CFRO in the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, February 14, 2014. That's Valentine's Day. I'm Jackie and I'm joined here today in studio by Cynthia.
Hello.
And Allison.
Hello.
Welcome. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and also streamed live at cooperadio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. So today is Valentine's Day, and as such, our show today is about all things love and how this relates to our friends in the animal kingdom. What is love? Do other beings aside from humans experience love? Do animals make love? Alyssa and I hit the streets earlier this week to ask the public these, along with a few other questions about love. We'll share these interesting responses with you today. We'll also discuss love and how it relates to human animals, as well as human-animal dynamics in relation to love. I also had the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Jonathan Balcombe, author of best-selling books Pleasurable Kingdom and Second Nature, and animal behavior scientist regarding animal love, mating, and sexual pleasure. I'm excited to share this enlightening interview with you later in the show, so we have a great show for you today. So please do stay tuned. And we're going to start off with our discussion about love. I thought I would start off that by sharing a poem that I wrote last week related to Valentine's Day. Love cannot be bought this Valentine's Day. It doesn't come in brightly colored packaging. It doesn't have the scent of floral perfume wafting from red candles. It doesn't sell itself with indulgent marketing and exploitation of human emotions. Love doesn't oppress the weak and benefit the wealthy. It isn't cruel to those that may not look the way your advertisements so clearly depict. It is not sexist, elitist, and otherwise discriminatory. Love doesn't evoke jealousy or competition for commercial interests. Love, real love, doesn't make a profit off suffering. Real love is compassionate, kind, and caring. Real love is felt by all and shared with others so deserving. Real love is felt, not bought, and given by the heart, not the hand.
Beautiful, Jackie.
Thank you.
I loved it when you posted that on your Facebook.
I know.
Lovely.
Thank you. So we're going to start talking about love. And what other symbol of love with animals can there be than animal odd couples? Cynthia, I know you brought a book along. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, so my cousin actually got me this book, and it's called Unlikely Friendships, and it's about true stories of animal friendships. And I didn't realize until I looked at it today that it's for kids, and I've read it like twice. I just love it. It just has such cute stories of a monkey and a dove and a bear and a cat, an elephant and a dog, and the lion and the orcs is a beautiful story as well. As this lion who normally eats orcs is...
Wow. Orcs
is like a little antelope.
Okay.
And it adopts this orcs who's lost its mom and takes care of it, but can't nurse it because it has no milk. And then she also gets weak because she's trying to take care of this orcs. And then unfortunately the orcs dies, and then she goes on her way. But people in the village, it was in Africa, they were just shocked to see this friendship and love between these two unlikely animals. So yeah, lovely, lovely book. I recommend it if you can get it from the library or get it for yourself, because it's beautiful.
I saw a similar video about that with a jaguar and a baboon baby that the jaguar had eaten the mother, and then orphaned this baboon, but then had tried to take care of the baboon as if it was her own infant. Yeah, it was crazy how that can happen.
Yeah.
And I'm also was going to talk about this film that I saw not too long ago called Animal Odd Couples. And it's just a great film about all these relationships that animals have, typically in sanctuary, unfortunately, or zoo sometimes environments. There's some, I'll share a couple of the stories. There's Anthony and Riley, which are two rescued animals from illegal pet trade. One is a jaguar, and one is a lion, and one is a coyote. And then there is Kate and Pip, a dog who had rescued an orphaned deer. It was a surrogate mother, basically. And then there is one of my favorite stories, which is Jack and Charlie. And it's a blind horse and a goat. So I'm just going to share a quick clip from the film, Animal Odd Couples, which kind of describes their relationship.
Come on, babies. Come here, Charlie. Horse. Come on, horse. This is Charlie and Jack. Charlie is a horse that I rescued who's extremely old. He's 40 years old. He's lost the sight in both of his eyes. When he lost his eyesight, we decided that we needed to put him down. But we didn't give enough credit to relationships among our animals. Because as soon as Charlie lost his eyesight, Jack, my old goat here, who's 16, took up the job of being Charlie's eyes. One time we had some tornado weather and there was a microblast. Jack came home screaming. And it was like, Timmy's in the well kind of thing. He's running to the gate, he's yelling. And so we come through the gate and Jack just took off. And what we found was the microblast had twisted a grove of trees in a circle. And my blind horse is in the middle of it. And there was no way for him to get out. So Jack actually came and got us to go help his buddy because he couldn't lead Charlie out of that. After that day, I've no longer worried about my blind horse.
So that was the story of Jack and Charlie. I just love that story. And again, that's from Animal Odd Couples, a film by PBS. And it's also, I think, on Netflix, the American Netflix. Allison also had a little thing she wanted to share about love.
Yeah, I really liked your poem. And it made me think about just extending and expanding your heart to all creatures, big and small. I mean, we often, when we think of loving animals, we think of our companion animals, right? Which I would love. I mean, I think we've all had companion animals, and I know you do right now, Jackie. Could talk about that forever, but but I don't have any companion animals. And just sharing a little story here, I do have sometimes companion animals who live in my house who are spiders. I name them. One was Fred, and I can't remember the other one's names. Anyways, and I kind of say that jokingly, but it is true. The other day I was doing my workout in my living room, and I found, and I just noticed on the floor, like the tiniest little speck of a spider. And I felt compassion for that spider. And the reason I share this is because I know some people wouldn't even give that a second thought. Like, I still see people step on spiders, and I can't understand that. I did whatever I could to get that spider out of my place because it wasn't a good environment for him, right? And I just want to say, you know, that little spider has a life. That little spider, I believe, has a soul. Spiders have families. Spiders are living beings, and they want to live just like all of us. And that's just one example of animals that deserve our compassion, from the tiniest little creature to the biggest creature of all.
Selector. boy, and I seen a lot of pain, but I don't wanna write a love song for the world. I just wanna write a song about a boy and a girl. Junkies on the corner always calling my name, and the kids on the corner playing ghetto games. When I saw you getting down, girl, I hope it was you. And when I look into your eyes, I knew it was true. I said, hey, I'll be gone today, but I'll be back from around the way. It seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know. But I know metaphysical man, but I know when the stars are aligned, you can bump into a person in the middle of the road, look into the eyes, and you suddenly know. Rocking in the dance hall, moving with you, dancing in the night out in the middle of June. My mama told me, don't lose you, cause the best luck I had was you. I said, hey, I'll be gone today, but I'll be back from around the way. It seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know. The best luck I had was you, and I know one thing, that I love you. I say, hey, I'll be gone today, but I'll be back, come around the way. It seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know. I say, hey, I'll be gone today, but I'll be back, come around the way. It seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know.
So that was Say Hey, I Love You by Michael Franti and Spearhead.
You are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 CFRO, Vancouver's Co-op Radio, broadcasting live in the downtown east side and unceded Coast Salish territories. So this week is our Cultivating Compassion event. It's no coincidence that it's around Valentine's Day, and this is our second annual event where we team up with another vegan-operated radio show here on Co-op Radio called Drishti Point Yoga Radio. The event has three parts: a vegan bake sale, which happened yesterday, a film screening, not a screaming, which is today, and a yoga workshop, which is tomorrow. So the bake sale was yesterday at Unity Yoga, which is near Commercial Drive, and it was a great event. We had amazing bakers, amazing treats. I can list just a few of them. There was a lemon bundt cake, many different types of cupcakes, truffles, snickerdoodles, whoopie pies, chocolate cake, pumpkin cheesecake, poppy seed tarts, and of course, all these lovely treats were all vegan and all donated by amazing bakers. So Jackie, how else did we do? How did you find the event?
It was great. We had so much. I was surprised by how many people showed up, because it was kind of a weird, you know, not weird, but kind of a hidden location. And it's Thursday in the middle of the afternoon, but luckily there was the kids yoga class around the beginning time, so that helped us out a lot. A lot of kids wanted some yummy treats, and their parents were very supportive.
Great marketing strategy.
Yeah, it just happened to work out that way. And so in the end, we made a total of $510, which I was pretty impressed by.
That's great.
And it's going towards our film screening, which is tonight.
Mm-hmm. And 10% to Vokra.
Yes. 10% to Vokra, yeah. And, of course, helping film screening because it's a free film screening. Of course, we're accepting donations because the film screenings do cost us money. So we appreciate your support, of course, if you can pay. No pressure. And we also, so the film screening's tonight, which is February 14th, and it's at the SFU Harbor Center in downtown in the Fletcher Theater. So once you find it, it's on Hastings. I think it's 575 Hastings?
I think it's 555.
555 Hastings.
Like, yeah, it's about Hastings between Seymour and Richards.
Perfect. And it starts at 7, but come early because we have an amazing raffle. So come around, I would say come around 6:30 to get your raffle tickets, and Allison will tell you about all our great raffle prizes.
Yeah, so we have 11 prizes, and all this is a fundraiser again for Animal Voices in Drishti Point to help us keep doing the good work that we are doing. We have a couple of beautiful boxes of soaps for Valentine's Day. One is this big, huge box of soap from Rocky Mountain Soap Company, all vegan, 36 soaps. It's a value of $189. We have a lovely gift box from Lush Cosmetics of vegan soap products as well, and a real good variety there. We have 3 yoga gift packages with DVDs and books on yoga and spirituality, and some Me and You vegan deodorant. And one of the gift packages actually has a $50 gift certificate for yoga classes. We have cupcakes, lots of cupcakes. We're going to be having a dozen, like, in-person live cupcakes from Edible Flowers. We also have a gift certificate for cupcakes from Fairy Cakes. We have some beautiful Zimt vegan artisan raw chocolates. The Elephant in the Room, a nonprofit organization, donated a couple of wonderful prizes, a Yorkie dog umbrella, which is a really, really nice item. And these items were selling really well at VegFest last year. I'm not sure why, but it's a Michael Jackson doggy t-shirt is what I call it. It's like a dog that's dressed like Michael Jackson. They were super popular. And dinner for two at Eternal Abundance as well, which is going to make a lovely romantic dinner.
Wow, that sounds great. It'll be great. So yeah, get your raffle tickets, and they're $1 each and 6 for $5, I believe. So, and then tomorrow, which is February 15th from 2 to 5 at Open Door Yoga on Main and 14th, there's a yoga workshop facilitated by myself, Cynthia, and Farah, who is from Drishti Yoga. And it's a 3-hour workshop, which is called also Cultivating Compassion. And it'll include some asana practice, so some physical practice, discussion and dialogue, and reflection about how we can contribute to the health and happiness of all sentient beings. There is a cost, $20 to $40, but of course, no one is turned away for lack of funds. So if you...
It's a sliding scale, right?
Sliding scale, okay. Yeah. $20 to $40, sliding scale, but of course... If you can't afford that, just come, and everybody's welcome. And you can register early if you like. Just give us an idea of how many people are coming. opendooryoga.bc.ca/events to register. But of course, there's no need to pre-register. You can just show up, and we'd be happy to have you. I'm really excited because as a vegan and somebody in a yoga, somebody who practices yoga, to me, they're the same thing. And so they're both equally important parts of my practice. So I'm really excited to expand this compassion and love to the yoga community.
I just wanted to mention too, at the film screening of Speciesism, for people who want a copy of this film, we'll be selling limited copies there. It's probably going to be the only place in Vancouver that you can buy them. They'll be $25 each. And that'll be your way to own a copy of this DVD if you really love the film. I had bought one, actually. I want to show it to people. And we'll have books for sale, too.
Yeah. And, yeah, and we had Mark DeVries from Speciesism on last week, and he had a really great interview. So I recommend you should listen to that as well.
AnimalVoices.org.
Exactly.
Great. So, yeah, like I mentioned earlier, earlier this week, Alyssa and I hit the streets, and we got some interviews from the public about their thoughts on love and how animals feel love. Do they feel love? We're going to just play that clip right now.
You know, love makes the world go round, and love, baby, makes the seesaw.
So, how would you describe love?
Oh, love is the most wonderful thing in the world. I would describe it as being all-encompassing. It takes over all of your soul and your mind and your body and leads you to even greater things, like wisdom and stuff in your side, yourself.
And do you think that humans are the only animals that experience love?
I don't think so. Dolphins for sure experience love.
And do you think there's anything that humans in general or some humans maybe could learn from animals about love?
Yeah, definitely. Especially birds and monkeys and dogs and dolphins.
Okay. And what do you think that is that we could learn?
Spirit?
to be happy with what we have, not want more. Like, birds have nests, you know, but they don't go shopping too much, you know. They go picking around, like, for branches and stuff, so maybe that's something, I don't know if that's, like, shopping or not, but, you know, yeah, definitely, all animals can teach us something, too, yeah.
Do you ever think about the capacity of, like, cows or chickens or pigs to love?
Yeah, I think so. Cows, definitely. I've seen cows in India, and they were really responsive to humans, to me and to other people I saw. Chickens, I haven't seen that much, but I could imagine it would be the same for them, especially, like, I mean, when you love an animal, like, when you see the little chickie and you say, like, I love that, then, like, he must feel that, right? That love, that attention, you know? And then the other animal, pigs, too, even pigs, because you love them, because they're so cute. They must, you know, hear you and then come and oink, oink, you know, back to you.
How would you describe love in general?
I don't know if I'm the best. Me and my girlfriend just broke up. So.
Oh, no. Ouch.
So.
Okay, we can move on to the next question if you don't want to talk about it. I completely understand. Do you think that humans are the only animals capable of love?
No, no, not at all.
Okay, and how do you think other animals express or show their love?
I see these guys cuddle up. We have a cat as well. And the cat cuddles up. They'll keep it nice, you know.
And what do you think that we could possibly learn from animals about love?
It's unconditional.
Unconditional.
Do you ever think about the capacity of pigs or chickens or cows to love other...
Yeah, I guess pigs. Yeah.
Do you think they experience it similar to how humans do?
Yeah, I guess. I just slow roasted some... lots of pig yesterday, Hexes. So.
So, generally, how would you describe love?
Love? Something you feel for others and have done and kind of what makes the world go round, hopefully.
Great. And do you think humans are the only animals capable of love?
Definitely not.
What other animals do you feel might have the capacity for love, and how do you think they express it?
I think most social animals definitely have love for each other, and a lot of companion animals have love for humans, obviously. So I think a lot of people have experienced that, and it doesn't really need to be outlined too clearly.
Do you think that animals like cows and pigs and chickens have the capacity to feel love in a similar way to humans?
I think pigs definitely. Cows, not really sure. Chickens, no.
How would you describe love?
Love? Oh, wow. I guess it's a connection you feel between anything that is strong enough for you to consider it love. So I guess it should be special or something. I don't know. Yeah.
And do you think humans are the only animals capable of love?
Probably not. That'd be presumptuous.
Okay. And how do you think other animals can express or share love?
Any way they want, I guess. Like, I don't know.
Can you think of any stories or any...
Well, of course. There's, like, cats, for instance. My roommate, she went through, like, a rough time recently. And it was funny, because usually that cat kind of, like, it goes around as a saddle up. But during that specific time, it was there the whole time. It just kind of stuck around. It was like, hey, I know I'm here for you.
Okay, what about the capacity of animals like cows or chickens or pigs to love each other?
Sure. You know, if they're in proximity, maybe something sparks. Yeah, and it'd be hard for us to really be like, hey, that's definitely, like, love between these two guys, because already they're so disconnected from how we process things.
You know? Do you think, though, that, I mean, like, you know, nuzzling or cuddling together or, like, you think, like, that might be evidence?
Probably, but then again, so good a kick in the face. We don't know. We don't have the perspective.
They have a lot in common.
We do have that. I can imagine that. That makes, like, more sense than a kick in the face. Like, and
what's the most general way you can describe love?
Oh, well, it's one of those indescribable feelings that just is overwhelming at sometimes. It's like a road that you go down and you just don't know when it's going to go up or down, roller coaster, it's everything.
And do you think human beings are the only animals capable of love?
Oh, definitely no. I think any species out there has some sort of connection with something, whether we call it love.
And I guess what are some of the ways that you think that other animals express love between each other?
Well, just like the pack mentality. See a lot of animals, that's like their family. They stick together, and if somebody's in trouble, like one of their family or friends, I'm sure that they feel that same connection. It shows in like orca pods on and off.
Do you ever think about, or can you imagine that animals like cows and chickens and pigs feel love for each other?
I guess I could imagine that. Yeah. Yeah, it's something I haven't put a lot of thought into.
Not many people have.
I just had a scrambled egg breakfast, so I'm sure that I love that egg, so it was good.
Do you think other animals other than humans make love?
So I'm sure if they're with their like companion, yeah, it's got to be something like that. I can't say for sure, but
maybe.
Yeah.
So how would you describe love?
Love? I think trust. If someone I love and he is not happy, means I'm not happy too.
And do you think humans are the only animals that experience love?
No, I have no idea. But maybe we saw a lot, but we didn't recognize it because we are busy or something. So maybe they do, but we can't recognize the love. But if I go to Africa, maybe I can see that because I go there to see that. But I think daily in the world, we have to think, we have to concentrate.
Yeah, we need to look. You don't see it if you don't look. But if you look, then it's there.
Exactly.
First question is, what are your general thoughts about what love is?
That's kind of a hard question. I don't really know how to put it to words. It's kind of, I don't even know.
It's inexpressible. It's so deep, there's no words for it.
Something like that, yeah.
Do you think that animals other than humans have the capacity to feel love to each other?
I think they definitely have the capacity to feel something for each other. I'm not sure if I would term it necessarily love, but absolutely. I mean, things like orcas and dolphins, they do all sorts of, or probably our closer relatives like the bonobos or what, primates or whatever. Absolutely, some sort of emotion. I just don't know if it'd be love particularly. Yeah. Some sort of connection to another of its own species for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
How do you think other animals other than humans kind of express loving feelings or attachment or bonding?
I don't know. Probably through behaviors.
Do you think similar to the ways that we express love? Maybe?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think definitely cuddling and the kind of more physical expression, I think for us is definitely more than physical a lot of the times.
How about animals like cows and pigs and chickens? Do you imagine that they have relationships and care for each other?
I think definitely pigs, which for sure. I think maybe not chickens. It really depends on the animal. I mean, intelligence levels really differ between different animals, for sure.
Why pigs?
I think they're pretty close to us, actually. I think they're fairly similar to us, more than people give them credit for.
Well, if you could generally describe what love is to you.
Oh, wow. Mutual affection and trust?
Yeah, definitely trust.
I think humans are the only animals to experience and express love.
No.
You see the videos on YouTube of, like, for instance, Christian the lion, who just loves those people who come back to him in Africa.
Yeah.
Most touching story. And, like, you see anyone who has had a pet.
You can see
love from them, for sure. Yeah.
What about love between animals?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have pets who, like, if one of the other ones is gone and stuff, they obviously...
Like sometimes in shelters you'll see it and they won't separate two of them because they've like grown up together.
Yeah.
They don't want it.
Do you think animals like cows or pigs or chickens, like farmed animals, do you think they experience love between each other?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm biased. I'm vegan. I'm going to be on the animal side here. I mean, they say pigs are smarter than dogs, right? And you can see love from a dog, so why would it not be there? And I think that just because it may not be like the human expression of love doesn't necessarily make it any less valid of a emotion, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard because so much of our emotions are based on like an anthropological centric view that that it's hard to sort of just put it onto animals, but I don't think it downplays what they experience.
So that was our public discussions about love. Very interesting. I have to say, I thought it was very interesting that people thought that chickens weren't capable of love a lot. But
what's the deal with putting down all these chickens?
I know. I love chickens. Chickens love.
And they're probably one of the more maternal animals. So I found that really interesting. Yeah. That was. Did any of you have a quick opinion?
Yeah,
on that?
I just everybody loves the dolphins. I mean, I love a good dolphin too. But, you know, I just think it's really interesting when people kind of. I can hear people making the connection when they're like, "Oh yeah, other animals feel love," and then they're like, "Oh, and I ate eggs," and then they try to make a joke. You know, when people get uncomfortable, they make a joke, mm-hmm. and I think that was a really great segment. And I think we should do more of that. It just says outreach. I think it's great.
Yeah. All right. So animal behavior expert and ethologist, which is a scientist of animal behavior, Jonathan Balcom, is a passionate advocate for animals and their living spaces. His best-selling books, Pleasurable Kingdom and Second Nature, present animals in a new light and present a revolution in the human-animal relationship. Earlier this week, I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Balcom about emotions and some of the remarkable expressions of love and mating behaviors that our non-human friends experience and demonstrate. Here's that interview. All right, Jonathan, thanks for joining me. Can you start by telling me what got you so interested and intrigued in the study of animal emotions?
Well, I've always been interested in animals from my earliest memory. And I guess it was a good time to grow up being interested in animals because around the time I was growing up into my teens, back in the 1970s, was around the time that science took an important turn away from an earlier view, which kind of took a very skeptical look, a doubting look at animal minds and animal emotions, and began to take notice and to be interested in exploring that. What was formerly an agnostic kind of position became, I won't say a religious one, but certainly one that parallels, that sort of way of thinking in the sense that an inquiring, that's a very poor parallel, frankly, but what I'm trying to say is that science became inquisitive and open about asking questions about animal minds, animal thinking, animal emotions.
Okay, great. Can you explain what anthropomorphism means and how the term has affected the study of animal behavior?
Anthropomorphism is when we kind of describe an animal behavior as if the animal is a human. And it's problematic because an example I like to give is the smile of a dolphin. Is if you look at a bottlenose dolphin, is that sort of smiling face, the kind of happy-looking face. And dolphins can certainly be happy, but dolphins in captivity, for instance, probably are not happy and maybe miserable and oftentimes, and yet they still have that smile. So to use the shape of a dolphin's face, which is not really very flexible, at least not that we can tell, as a guide to how the dolphin's feeling is not a very critical way of assessing how the dolphin might actually be feeling. However, anthropomorphism is useful if it's done in a critical way, if it's done in a way that we are informed about the animal we're looking at. So if we know, for instance, how a dolphin behaves and we know what body posture may indicate in a dolphin, then that's a much more reliable indicator of how the dolphin may be feeling than to merely look at the shape of the face, which is what we're conditioned to do what we do with our own species, because our faces do convey a lot of information about our emotions. So anthropomorphism has its place in science, but it needs to be done in an informed and critical way.
So many people still seem to believe that humans are the only beings to experience love. Can you explain some of the faults in this line of thinking?
Well, you can certainly look in a lot of textbooks on animal behavior and fail to find the word love in the index. It's an emotion that scientists certainly are uncomfortable ascribing to other animals. And there's, of course, dozens and dozens of anecdotes about, two animals who show every indication of being very closely emotionally bonded or in love with each other. And they may even be examples between species. There was a nice book that came out a couple of years ago called Unlikely Friendships, which described and showed pictures of remarkable connections between individual animals that may have been brief and fleeting, such as a manta ray who swam up around and stroked a human diver and vice versa, or they can be very long-term. Just recently there was in the news bottlenose dolphins and a kind of whale, pilot whales, I believe it was. They are known to, in some cases, to stay together as if they're one pod, individually, for at least 5 years and over long distances. So these seem to be close associations. Whether those are based on love is another question. But certainly we should expect feelings like love to evolve in animals who, for instance, have to work together closely to raise their young successfully, and that certainly applies to a lot of mammals, a lot of birds, quite a few fishes, and some other species. And also, I think another window onto the capacity for love in non-humans is how animals respond if they lose their partner, if they lose the object of their love. And there's a lot of evidence for grieving behavior, for extreme cases of depression and feeling really bad upon the loss of things. There's studies of baboons that show changes, hormonal and behavioral changes that mirror those of women who've lost an infant. And there's also studies of and observational studies on elephants and parrots and other species who stop eating. They have sleeping disorders and other problems if they've lost somebody who a member of their own social community or a partner who they were apparently very close to. So the grieving side, I mean, love is involves positive and negative emotions, and certainly the grieving side of loss is another indicator that there was a great deal of love there before the loss.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have any stories or experiences of the ways that animals express love?
I can tell you that I've met a parrot, well, actually it was a cockatoo, probably about 25, 35 years old, so a middle-aged cockatoo. I mean, they do live up to close to a century and beyond in some rare cases. And this bird only had about half of his feathers left, and he plucked a lot of the feathers off. And he apparently had been through a series of losses. Two or three human companions, guardians, had died, predeceased this bird. They live a long time, and they may be an older person cohabiting with them. And so it's hard to say whether that was a function of love or stress or something else. But certainly, it was quite profound to see this bird up close. And this bird did what baboon mothers do when they lose their infants. Baboon mothers seek grooming opportunities. They actually increase the amount of grooming they solicit and receive and give to other baboons. And in the case of birds, it's preening behaviors. And this particular cockatoo would sidle down. He would stand on the top of a cage. This was at a sanctuary for rescued parrots in out west. And this in Utah, actually, and this bird would sidle down to be groomed, to solicit grooming. Would bend the head down and close his eyes and look very, very relaxed and in a state of bliss when you would sort of rub the feathers behind the neck. So not exactly a story of love, but certainly a story that I think illustrates the intense emotional attachments that, in this case, a bird can feel.
Mm-hmm. And why is this important emotion, as you mentioned earlier, so often ignored by the scientific community?
Well, I would say it's important from both the standpoint of the scientific community and the general public at large, because we treat animals often abysmally. We continue to treat them as if they're just widgets. They're legally defined as property of humans, and we treat them accordingly often. You know, of course, animals caught up in factory farms and animals housed in cages for the pet trade or for scientific experiments. And so it's really important that people become aware of the intense emotional capacities that animals have. Once we do that, I think that's an important part to progressing, to changing how people treat animals. And it's interesting because we're so terribly uncritical about how we treat animals now, in the sense that we can show such compassion and concern for a beloved pet or a companion animal, as we should, and yet the same animal in a different context, be it Fido, the dog in the home, versus some dog who's used in dog fighting, albeit it's illegal in the United States, but And then you consider dogs are eaten in other parts of the world. But really, that's not really any much different than the fact that we eat cows and pigs over here. It's just a very uncritical kind of behavior that we have in how we treat animals according to how we categorize them, not according to how they feel and how sentient they are.
That's a very good point that you just brought up. And I think that ties into maternal love, particularly in the instant of cows and calves being separated. What kind of thought process do you think the mother goes through in a scenario like this?
Well, I'm an evolutionary biologist, and evolutionary theory is a good predictor of what you might expect. Because it's the challenge with all this stuff is that we don't live inside a cow's brain, so we don't know how a cow feels. And we can't literally feel a cow's emotion any more than we can literally feel another person's emotion. Behavior is a pretty powerful way of conveying how feelings are as well. And certainly when you see, I haven't witnessed it firsthand, but I have seen several video clips of calves being taken away from their mothers right after birth, which is the routine standard practice in the dairy industry. And it's wrenching to see this cow running along beside the wheelbarrow or beside the man who's dragging or carrying the calf, the newborn calf, who is often just dumped on the other side of the fence in the next pen, and the cow can't get to her baby. But back to the evolutionary point that I want to make of the argument based on evolution. I mean, a cow invests hugely in a calf, as does a mother. A woman invests hugely in her baby, in humans. And as you have a higher investment, you should expect the evolution of attachment, because it's very important that the mother be strongly protective of and defending and nurturing of her calf. And similarly, it cuts both ways. If the calf didn't give a darn about the mother and just wandered off willy-nilly and didn't show any attachment to the mother, the calf would be more likely to get lost. And those genes for not being attached to the mother wouldn't be very likely to pass on to the next generation, because the calf would probably starve and die. Whereas calves and calves that are closely bonded are going to stay together, they're going to be a little bit safer, and the genes that they carry for nurturing and love, which is really getting to the question, are going to be more likely to be passed on into the next generation. So emotions like love are just as subject to evolutionary forces as are things like the length of legs or the color of one's hair. And so that's sort of the evolutionary angle on predicting that we should expect that cows and calves are closely bonded together. That is to say, they have some kind of love, what we would call love. Do we see that behaviorally? We certainly do. We see how a mother bellows for her calf for hours or days, often usually days, if the calf is taken away or if the calf's lost. I remember watching a herd of cattle on a hillside once, and there were some calves about and a lot of cows, and one cow just started really mooing loudly. And suddenly, over the crest of the hill, this calf just came running, you know, running through the crowd of cattle. I don't remember if the calf was calling as well, but certainly cows recognize their own calf's calls and vice versa. And the calf came running along up to the mother and then started nursing. And it was wonderful to see that that connection. I studied the very same phenomenon in bats as a graduate student, how mothers recognize their own pups' calls, and they use that to reunite with them, to nurse them.
Wow. And on a different note, many non-human animals have some very elaborate mating rituals. Can you share a few of some of the most impressive mating rituals that you've heard of or witnessed?
Well, back to evolution, probably most of the most elaborate mating rituals are a result of choosiness. Certainly among females is the most common pattern, but sometimes both parties are quite animated in their courtship of each other. And I think part of that may be assessing compatibility, assessing rigor, strength. You know, is this partner going to really work with me to raise these 7 chicks that we're going to have to raise and build this nest first and incubate and feed them? I'm speaking, of course, of birds in this case. Is this dad going to be a good provider? But certainly there are some mammals, some primates, for instance, in which parental care is bidirectional. The male needs to help care, and certainly humans are a good example of that. You know, females are choosy in many species because the female has to make a huge investment in her young. She has, in the case of mammals, has to go through gestation, pregnancy, and then lactation, feeding milk for the young, which is very, very energetically expensive, and so she's already putting out a lot. And so she wants to pick a male who's going to be a good provider. So that's sort of, again, a sort of an evolutionary argument for why we might find a very high level of assessment and choosiness before mates form and actually produce young. So sort of more back to the question, mating rituals, courtship would be another term. They're quite elaborate in a lot of species, including fishes. There's some quite lengthy and spectacular pre-mating rituals in fishes. Some of the most entertaining are in birds. You can watch videos of manakins, which are very small, brightly colored birds, and it's usually the males in the case of birds who are brightly colored, and that's partly to, there's theories about that, maybe to show your fitness level, how fit you are in the evolutionary sense, how well endowed you are to help raise the young or to provide good genes is another kind of argument. But these manakins do these incredible dances where they'll sort of kind of do a moonwalk where they stutter step so rapidly that you can't even see the individual steps. They just look like they're sliding along this branch backwards. It's really almost comical to watch, but it's also pretty impressive. And they also, manakins work in teams where there's one sort of alpha manakin and there's two other males who sort of assist. They're like sidekicks. And so the three of them work as a pair, and they may be jumping, hopscotching over each other in a kind of a spectacular way. This is all to get the female's attention. And the two subordinate males are not even expecting any kind of mating opportunity. They're simply assisting. And, of course, his theory is, you know, why do that? Why help this guy when he's the one who's going to get to pass his genes on if he's successful? And, of course, the theory is that these subordinate males are en route to becoming the leader of a group in the future. So it's sort of almost apprenticeship program, if you like. So that's just one illustration of how elaborate some of these mating systems and these pre-mating rituals can be.
Wow. And are humans, a lot of people like to think this, but are humans alone in engaging in sex for pleasure, or do other animals do this as well?
If we were the only ones who engaged in sex for pleasure, then we should not expect to find non-procreative sexual behavior elsewhere. That is to say, we shouldn't expect animals to be wasting time and energy in just engaging in sexual or erotic behaviors that are nonetheless not going to result in the production of offspring. And yet we do actually see there's actually a lot of sexual activity that animals engage in that are manifestly non-procreative. And I point people towards to a book that was published back in 1999. There should be really more coming out on this, but I haven't seen any sort of overview or review of this subject since. But a book called Biological Exuberance by a biologist based in Seattle. Very good book, a 750-odd page book that summarizes examples of non-procreative sexual behavior in birds and mammals. And there are hundreds of examples in hundreds of species. And we're talking about things like same-sex pairings, which are fairly common, inappropriate penetrations, masturbation. There's some other variations. And, all these behaviors don't necessarily indicate that it's about pleasure. There are sort of other ideas that people have suggested, you know, keeping your system in good condition, for instance, and maybe, you know, sometimes same-sex pairings may be making the best of a limited situation in harem species where there's no females available because one male has many, and things like that. But we should, even if some of those dynamics are taking place, we shouldn't exclude pleasure from the equation. And I argue in my books, Pleasurable Kingdom and The Exultant Arc, that pleasure is a very major motivator for sexual behavior, which, after all, is a very, very important behavior for genetic success. I mean, you don't die if you don't have sex, but you're not going to be successful in the genetic sweepstakes if you don't have sex either. So we should expect powerful evolutionary forces that drive or motivate animals to engage in behaviors that are adaptive, and pleasure is a very powerful motivator. So I argue, based on those kinds of arguments and what we observe, is that sex is pleasurable for non-humans.
And several animal species, you briefly mentioned this earlier, particularly birds, are known to mate for life. Can you explain why they do this?
It's a great question, because many species do not mate for life, and so it kind of begs the question, why would some mate for life, or for that matter, why would some be more promiscuous or more inclined to change partners from one year to the next? And there's a number of theories to help try and explain that, but certainly mating for life, we do see that in a number of mammal species and bird species. It probably occurs in fishes as well. Reptiles and amphibians, not so sure. I doubt it. I don't think there's any evidence for that, although I do want to throw out there in the defense of reptiles that tool use and planning has recently been demonstrated in crocodiles. But anyway, back to mating for life. I think it gets back to the evolutionary argument I made earlier, that if you have gone through a great deal of time and effort to choose a good partner, it might just make sense to stay with that partner. After all, partners can become more efficient at working together if they work together over several seasons. They know the ins and outs of the other partner, and they know that they're reliable. They know that they're loyal and good with it. And so that might be one reason. It still leaves that question as to why other species don't stay with a partner over the course of succeeding years, but certainly some do. And once again, I think we should expect in species who work together like that over a long time, you're almost certainly going to have high level of attachment, which is to say emotional connection. And again, I think we might want to use the word love to characterize that relationship.
Great. And finally, what, if anything, do you think are some of the things that non-human animals could teach us about love?
I could certainly learn a few things. I think when we see animals tend to be really authentic and genuine. There is deception in nature, so you do get cheating and lying. You certainly get that in human society. But I think it's inspiring to see how loyal animals are about working together once they choose a mate. By and large, that's a little bit rose-tinted, however, because there are examples that have been discovered, particularly in birds, where what was formerly thought to be a very loyal and sort of faithful kind of relationship connection in mated pairs, you actually find one of the pair sneaking off and having copulations with other individuals whose genes end up in the nest. In different eggs and stuff like that, but anyway, nonetheless, I find animals endlessly inspiring in their energy and their commitment to what they do, and so I think maybe we can get a little bit of inspiration from there. But far be it for me to make any advice on love, because it's a really tricky emotion to handle in life.
That was Jonathan Balcom, ethologist and behavior expert and author. For more info and to order any of his books, if you're interested, please check out his website, Jonathan Balcom, that's BALCOMBE.com.
So we have some headlines for you here. Of course, I think the biggest story in animal news this week was about poor Marius, the giraffe, right? We all heard about that. Last Sunday, February 9th, the Copenhagen Zoo in Denmark killed Marius, a perfectly healthy young giraffe, despite public outrage and the offers of other zoos to take him in. The zoo killed the 2-year-old animal because they feared inbreeding. Zoo staff butchered Marius and then fed part of his body to their lions in front of a public audience, including children. So how did the public react to such a graphic display? Well, the staff at the zoo now say that they have received death threats and threats to burn down the zoo. People are really outraged about this, and it's quite amazing, I think, because, you know, people don't seem to blink a second when there's tens of thousands of, say, cows being killed every day for really no reason other than the taste of our palate. And then this one individual is butchered and slaughtered in public, of course. You know, the slaughterhouse had glass walls that day, and it was right in front of children, no less. I think it was because it was such a public display. What are your thoughts on this tragic event?
Well, I think that kind of references, although it's a different animal, it references to what Jonathan had mentioned in the interview, that over here, you know, we love our dogs, and we're so horrified that in other countries, like in Asia, dogs are slaughtered for food and fur, but yet we don't blink an eye over the fact that we're killing millions of animals for our own food.
And that most of those animals are also babies. I think
exactly.
People were really shocked that Marius was only 2, but I mean, that's how old most farm animals
are
before they're slaughtered, even younger.
Younger.
Exactly. And so I think there's a great photo on Facebook of Marius next to a cow, and I think his name is Martin, and it says, you know, Marius was killed, and one Marius was killed, one giraffe was killed, and the world was outraged, and a million of little baby calves are killed every day, and nobody blinks an eye.
5 weeks old, yeah, too.
Except for us animal activists, we're blinking.
And posting.
Doing stuff. Yeah, and then also this was on the cover of this, the Sun, the Vancouver paper. Meat of endangered whale is being shipped through Canada. The whaling nations of Iceland and Japan are using Canada as a transshipment destination in the trade of meat from endangered fin whales, the same species that Canada has agreed internationally to protect. So Canada says it's helpless to stop the trade, even though they signed the convention against this international species trade, which in 1981 listed the fin and other endangered species. However, Canada is saying because it's being shipped through, they can't do anything to stop it. And it's really interesting because Environment Canada even inspected the shipment of whale meat under the Wild and Animal Plant Protection Regulation. They test DNA samples to confirm it was this illegal whale meat and then sent it on its way because it lacked the authority to do anything else. Shocking. First time Canada has been involved in the transshipment of whale meat. However, so they're saying that they couldn't do anything. However, when 130 tons of Icelandic fin whale meat arrived in Germany last July, shipping companies denied to take the containers to Japan, and they were sent back to Iceland. So obviously we can do something about this,
yeah.
Canada.
Wow. Good job, Canada. All right, so you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM. Thanks for tuning in today for our love show. And I hope that you extend your love to all the animals and human animals in your life. So, and on next week's show, Allison, can you tell us what it is?
Yeah, so next week's show is going to be really interesting. First of all, if you've been listening to this show in recent weeks, I've been talking about how I've been delving into the world of makeup, and there's just so many options to navigate, and I want to know what's cruelty-free. I want to know about testing versus ingredients, and I'm sure there's other people, too, that have those questions. So we'll be having Tashina Combs on the show next week. She is an expert on these issues, and she is the brains behind LogicalHarmony.net, which is a vegan beauty and lifestyle blog. And for our feature interview, also really interesting, we'll be having Joan Ranquette on the show. She calls herself an animal communicator, and that's exactly what she does, is she talks to animals and they talk back to her, and we'll be learning about that, the world of animal communication, and just learning about all kinds of things about animals that you just never knew before.
Great, and we just ask you to keep connected to us via Animal Voices Vancouver on Facebook, Animal Voices YVR on Twitter, and also animalvoices.org for podcasts. So please stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith after this, and remember to be kind to the animals. We'll leave you now with Signs of Love by Moby.
Think of all the things that I could wish that I'd told her.